Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 397, titled The Virtual State and Machiavellian Politics. This is being recorded on February 2nd of 2003. We're going to plunge right in, talking about the relationship between the Israeli right and the underground Reich on one hand, and also the Republican Party, and specifically the Bush administration and the Bush candidacy and the underground Reich. And we're going to review an element that we've spoken about in the past by way of understanding the truly Machiavellian politics of the virtual state and how it can be present on both sides of a conflict that will be ultimately eliminating both sides to the benefit of the underground Reich, a virtual state if ever there was one. We're going to review briefly an element from the book The Secret War Against the Jews, subtitled How Western Espionage Betrayed the Jewish People, co-authored by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, published in softcover and hardcover by the St. Martin's Press in 1994. Now, this is in the context of the collapse of the Camp David peace talks in the summer of 2000, or as I believe, the deliberate sabotaging of those talks by the Republicans. Now, bear in mind that Yasser Arafat is not only an Otto Skorzeny protege, but the PLO has been financed chiefly by Saudi Arabia from the get-go. Bear in mind also that there are strong links between the underground Reich and the Israeli right wing, and beyond that, the Republicans were deliberately courting the Israeli right and working to frustrate Bill Clinton's policies with regard to the Middle East when Clinton was trying to broker the Oslo Accords. We looked at that inside one. Now, prominent among the PLO negotiating team at Camp David were people who were associated not only with the Central Intelligence Agency, but also specifically were proteges of James Baker. That's former Bush Secretary of State. James Baker, who, by the way, is quoted in two passages in the introduction to The Secret War Against the Jews. One of them says, "Whatsoever ye shall do unto the least of men, so shall ye do also unto me." Jesus of Nazareth, called by the Romans King of the Jews, circa A.D. 32. F blank 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 the Jews. They won't vote for us anyway. The Honorable James Baker, Secretary of State, United States of America, circa A.D. 1992. So that's the James Baker whose name was dubbed by the CIA to Baker's Dozen. Bear in mind that in addition to Otto Skorzeny and Saudi protege Yasser Arafat, these individuals were hooked up with the PLO negotiating team at Camp David. According to our sources, the CIA secretly brought several moderate Palestinians to the United States for intensive briefing. This group, codenamed Baker's Dozen, included most of the official Palestinian negotiating team with Israel: Hanan Ashrawi, Hana Senora, Saeb Erekat, Sari Nusseibeh, and other lower-ranking Palestinians were summoned to Langley for a three-day conference on integrating their politics with the U.S. Ashrawi was singled out as a good Palestinian image spokeswoman, dubbed by the company the Palestinian Golda Meir. June 25th, as we've spoken about in many programs, including For the Record 334, 337, and 346, on June 25th, 2000, two very important things happened. That is when Yasser Arafat walked out of the Camp David peace accords. It was the same day that Petroleum Executive George W. Bush named Petroleum Executive Dick Cheney as his vice presidential candidate. I would note that had the Clinton administration successfully brokered a Middle East peace settlement, that very likely would have given Al Gore the victory in 2000. We know from history that the Republicans, and specifically the Nixon campaign and Henry Kissinger, interfered with negotiations that were taking place between the Johnson administration and the North Vietnamese during the Vietnamese War, the Vietnam War, I should say. I strongly suspect, though I cannot prove, that something very similar happened in 2000 when the Saudis and their PLO proteges and Otto Skorzeny protege Yasser Arafat saw that they had a pro-petroleum Republican and underground Reich linked administration coming in, I think they basically said, screw it, we'll get a better deal from them than we will from the Clinton administration. And in the past, we've spoken at great length about links between the underground Reich and the Bush administration, the most recent of those connections being the elder George Bush's stewardship of the inclusion of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, a Nazi emigre organization, in effect, into the Republican Party. They were still working for George Bush in 1988. That's the elder George Bush. I would note that a number of key things happened when June 25th, 2000 passed. Again, Cheney in as Bush's vice presidential candidate, Arafat out of the peace talks. That subsequently led to the torpedoing of Ehud Barak's administration, which had brokered, basically, it had banked its political success on a successful negotiation. When that didn't happen, when the peace talks collapsed, and when the Second Intifada began, that was the end of Barak, and the Likud party and Ariel Sharon came to power. And I would note that the fascist connections of the Likud party remain ongoing. As we discussed in For the Record 94, the Likud party actually sent a representative to the February 1998 National Congress of the Alleanza Nazionale, the successor organization to the Italian fascist party. I would also note that the September 11th events were blamed by many people, including the Saudis, Arab militants, and also, by the way, their apologists in the so-called progressive community in the United States. Note my use of the term so-called. Also, the American far right, specifically American fascist elements, blamed September 11th on American support for Israel. Those attacks were in the works for years, and there were negotiations, peace negotiations going on when that took place. As a result of September 25th, the Labor Party has been basically politically disenfranchised in Israel. The underground Reich-linked Likud Party is now stronger than it's ever been. Peace process has been successfully shelled by the Bush administration, and obviously the political thermostat is accelerating dramatically in the Middle East. I believe that this was what was intended all along. I think basically that Israel is the final solution to the Jewish problem, and I think the underground Reich has been successfully maneuvering not only the Israeli right, but also the Arab right and Arab center into a situation where they will effect mutual extermination. And because of American support for Israel, I think that, and also resentment over other American ventures in the Middle East, I suspect that ultimately the Islamo-fascists and their secular Arabo-fascist colleagues, such as Saddam Hussein, may very well affect the destruction of the United States as well. Also note, in terms of Machiavellian politics, that Bush's support for the Israeli right wing and his backing of Ariel Sharon has also given the Bush administration the reputation of being pro-Israel and has helped them make greater inroads into the Jewish vote in the United States than they would otherwise have done. For the record, so to speak, the Bush administration is as pro-Israel and as pro-Jewish as Otto von Bolschwing. Again, I think that although Bush himself is simply being manipulated and people like Dick Cheney and others are simply after the oil and the riches, I think their underground Reich shadow masters, so to speak, are aiming at literally a war of annihilation in the Middle East, annihilating the Jews, annihilating most of the Arabs, and in turn provoking an Arab reaction against the United States, which will destroy much of the United States. By the way, bearing in mind my June 25th, 2000 hypothesis, and again, look at the front page of the New York Times for that date, 7/25/2000. Lead story, Arafat walks out of the Camp David peace accords. Number two story, Petroleum Executive George Bush assigns Petroleum Executive Dick Cheney, a veteran of the first Bush administration, as his vice presidential candidate. Reviewing an item that we looked at in For the Record 395, Financial Times, Thursday, January 16th of 2003, Iraq will cause a change in the region and make America's enemies desperate by Rula Khalaf. Let's review again who the top State Department official is in coordinating American policy with the so-called friendly regimes of that part of the world, including Saudi Arabia. That woman, by the way, is Elizabeth Cheney, Dick Cheney's daughter. Yet the work assigned to Ms. Cheney, a deputy U.S. Assistant Undersecretary of State and daughter of the Vice President, is hardly diplomacy as usual. The focus of her efforts is countries in the Arab world, and her newly generated post is at the forefront of U.S. efforts to instigate political reform among the authoritarian regimes long regarded by Washington as allies. I also want to hypothesize about what I suspect the underground Reich has in mind for the future. Obviously, a war of mass extinction in the Middle East, the annihilation of Israel, and another major terrorist incident against the United States. For example, the mass bioterror incident that takes place in the Nazi-tracked Serpent's Walk and that leads to the declaration of martial law. That will ultimately cause not only an American economic collapse, but a worldwide economic collapse as well. Something very similar could take place from a catastrophic rise in petroleum prices, another possibility that cannot be dismissed, particularly if there is a war in the Middle East using weapons of mass destruction, such as a nuclear exchange between Israel and any other countries in that part of the world. In the Nazi-tracked Serpent's Walk that I have talked about so many times, this is a, quote, novel, unquote, about a Nazi takeover, an underground Reich takeover of the United States in the mid-21st century. This book is ostensibly a novel. It was published by National Vanguard Books. That is the publishing arm of the National Alliance. And National Alliance Chief William Turner, the publisher of this book, or not William Turner, William Pierce, excuse me, has been quite explicit that his novels, the novels he writes and publishes, are intended as teaching tools for the Nazi faithful. The best known of those books is the Turner Diaries, the model for not only the Nazi terror group The Order in the mid-1980s, but also for Timothy McVeigh and company in the Oklahoma City bombing. By the way, in Chapter 25 of the Turner Diaries, The Order, the Nazi terror group discussed in, or the Nazi underground group discussed in that novel, they discuss putting a bomb in a jet plane and flying it into the Pentagon. So again, if people view some of this as far-fetched, the novels of William Pierce and of the National Alliance are intended as teaching tools, but of course that's silly, isn't it? Imagine somebody flying a plane into the Pentagon. We know that couldn't happen. But anyway, in Serpent's Walk, authored by Randolph D. Calverhall, a nom de plume, basically after a massive bioterrorist incident which wipes out much of the United States, including, by the way, those parts of the United States that supported Al Gore in 2000, martial law is declared, and the underground Reich, which has infiltrated the U.S. military, basically assumes dominance over the United States. The book itself is fairly complex, but basically the Jews are seen as the worldwide villains, and they produce, through the treacherous dealings of the Israelis, they lead the human race ultimately to a catastrophic war of near extinction. Israel gets wiped out, ultimately by the underground Reich, and the social and economic travails of the human race are blamed, of course, on the Jewish conspiracy. Serpent's Walk basically ends this way with a former mercenary named Alan Lessing helping to preside over the Nazi control of the United States. Serpent's Walk discusses the Israeli role here. Lessing began to gather up the papers and photographs. He pinched the bridge of his nose, then dragged his fingers away. Quote, "A preemptive surgical first strike, just like the Izzy's," that's the slang term for Israelis here, "just like the Izzy's pulled on the Arabs a few times," unquote. He picked up a sheaf of documents. "We keep this stuff, right? It's evidence of their intentions. I'll give it to Lisa's publicity people right away, and we'll have it on HomeNet before nightfall. I think we can promise you support." "They deserved it," Kienow growled. "We didn't do nothing to them." "Even if you did, I doubt if our ethnos group will make more than token objections. The world's had it with the Jews. Anybody as unpopular as the Jews have always been, Egypt, Babylon, Rome, Spain, every country in Europe during the Middle Ages, Russia, America, the Third Reich, must be doing something wrong. We'd have preferred peaceful and separate and distant coexistence, but they never got the message. Now, we don't care anymore. It's too bad, Wrench began. Don't waste your pity, Lessing snapped. They wouldn't waste any on you. Sure, it's sad that innocent people have to suffer, but it can't be helped. That's reality. That's nature. You can't save the dodo, the condors, and the other losers in the battle for survival. Species extinction happens over and over, like rain in the summertime. Forget ethics and morality and do unto others, unquote. The Izzy's said never again about the Holocaust, but then they turned around and did to the Palestinians everything they claimed the Germans had done to them. They called it self-defense. War under the pretext of peace, oppression in the name of justice and stability. The Arabs were weak and went under, but we're a different story. We're going to make it no matter who gets in our way, unquote. I hear Bill Goddard again, Wrench murmured. No, you hear me, Alan Lessing. There was a time when I'd have waffled and gone for turn the other cheek, but not anymore. Now you hear me and you hear our party, our ethnos, our majority, our first Fuhrer. You hear the past, you hear the present, and you hear the future. We are the future. Again, I think the underground Reich manipulation of both the Palestinians and the Israeli right aims at just such a conclusion. By the way, I would also note the tone of the so-called progressive sector in the United States, which in many ways have become enablers of just such a viewpoint. There are many elements in the so-called progressive community in this country that sound very much like Lessing in that novel. Also, by way of understanding the underground Reich and their presence on not only ethnically diverse, but as we're going to see in a minute, ideologically diverse and opposed elements, we're going to review briefly a couple of passages from the book Dreamer of the Day, subtitled Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International. That was authored by the brilliant Kevin Coogan. It's one of the most important books about the history of fascism, published in softcover by Autono Media, and you can visit their website at autonomedia.org. By the way, this is not to be interpreted as implying support by Kevin Coogan for the working hypothesis presented in For the Record. We're going to review a passage here in which Omar Amin von Leers, nay, Johann von Leers, first the chief of anti-Semitic propaganda for Goebbels' propaganda ministry, later a key anti-Semitic propagandist on behalf of Nasser's regime, the same regime that used Otto Skorzeny, and under whose stewardship Yasser Arafat got his start on behalf of the Underground Reich. We're going to take a look here at Goebbels' propaganda veteran von Leers' conversion to Islam and perversion of Islam as a vehicle for underground Reich aims. This is from a letter from von Leers to H. Keith Thompson. One thing is clear. More and more patriot Germans join the great Arab revolution against beastly imperialism. Again, sounds like elements of the progressive sector. That is good. To hell with Christianity, for in Christianity's name, Germany has been sold to our oppressors. Our place as an oppressed nation under the execrable Western colonialist Bonn government must be on the side of the Arab nationalist revolt against the West. Let Adenauer be furious that honest German patriots are not extradited to him or to his British or American bosses by those freedom-loving Arab countries. May the British swine call us meddlers. In a short time, British meddling in the Middle East will be over, as it has finished in Iraq, where the infidel servants of British imperialism are all killed. Ihamud Ulallah. The backing given by USA to the Jewish tyrants in Germany will make the German nation revolt. Indeed, for our nation there is only one hope, to get rid of Western imperialism by joining the Arab-led anti-imperialist group. By the way, one wonders to what extent one of the goals of this cynical, Machiavellian really would be a better way of exploiting both sides of conflicts, would be ultimately to convince the wealthy Arab oil-producing nations to switch their wealth to financial institutions in Europe associated with the underground Reich. Failing that, I think we'll see extermination. Bear in mind that the Arabs, the Germans are really no friends of the Arabs, but they're using them in connection with the geopolitical concept of the Earth Island. Hitler himself once referred to Arabs as, quote, lacquered half-apes who ought to be whipped. But nonetheless, note the fellow traveling, in some ways progressive-seeming anti-imperialist, unquote, pro-Arab rhetoric of Johann von Leers. We're going to turn to the Searchlight magazine's issue from November of 2001. This is Searchlight number 317. By the way, the Searchlight is a British anti-fascist publication. You can visit their website at searchlightmagazine.com. This is an article titled Hungary by Carl Pfeiffer in Budapest, and this talks about a revival in the Hungarian Arrow Cross ideology. The Hungarian Arrow Cross was associated with Hitler. Also, veterans of that very closely associated with the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization. In fact, it was Laszlo Pásztor, an Arrow Cross veteran, who headed up the Republican ethnic outreach organization that was formerly included as a permanent branch of the Republican Party when the elder George Bush was chairman of the Republican National Committee. But again, note the Underground Reich's use of progressive-sounding rhetoric here, and in particular, note the similarity between this third-position fascist rhetoric, so to speak, and what one is hearing from the so-called progressive community in the United States. This refers to a recent speech by István Surka. This is by Carl Pfeiffer in Budapest. István Surka, the far-right leader, used a commemoration of the victims of the New York terror tragedy in the Hungarian parliament to repeat his declaration that the terrorist attacks on the USA were a, quote, reaction from the oppressed peoples of the world against globalization, exploitation, and deliberate genocide in Palestine, unquote. And again, this is very similar to a lot of rhetoric that one is hearing from the so-called progressive sector today in the United States. Also note, in addition to the pro-Palestinian and anti-Semitic rhetoric there, note also the attempt at co-opting anti-globalization to what is basically a Yaqui-ite or third-position fascist position. We're going to review an element that we looked at briefly in For the Record 331 and in number 333. We've also spoken with the brilliant Kevin Coogan about Horst Mahler, a key leader of the NPD, the German National Democratic Party, which is the top Nazi party in Germany. This is from the Electronic Telegraph in the United Kingdom from September 25th of 2001. German right-winger applauds terrorists by Toby Helm in Berlin. One of the most prominent extreme right-wingers in German politics has caused uproar by praising the terrorist attacks against America on primetime television. Horst Mahler, a former member of the terrorist Red Army faction and now a leading voice in the National Democratic Party, said America had got what it deserved and described the victims as collateral damage, unquote. Mr. Mahler, a lawyer, was imprisoned during the 1970s for his terrorism links. He said on a political opinion program, Panorama, quote, "At last, the Americans have been hit in the heart." He described the hijackers as warriors prepared to kill themselves, unquote, in the cause of, quote, breaking the power of money, unquote. Horst Mahler, by the way, associated along with Ahmed Huber, a protege of Johann von Leers, with the NPD and also with the Al-Taqwa milieu as well. Huber is a director of Al-Taqwa, and Horst Mahler is a fellow traveler of Ahmed Huber. Now, note again the alleged anti-imperialist and anti-globalization rhetoric of Horst Mahler here. What we're going to look at next is the apparent infiltration of not only anti-fascist anarchists in Germany by fascist elements, but also, again, the attempt at the Underground Reich, this virtual state's use of the anti-globalization movement. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who got this from Panorama magazine of August 2nd of 2001. It's called L'Internationale of Chaos by Pino Buongiorno, and it's about Horst Mahler and neo-Nazi infiltration of the anti-fascist Black Bloc in Germany. They have shaved heads, dressed completely in black, and wear hoods or bandanas to disguise themselves. They carry long metal bars to smash ATMs or shop windows and Molotov cocktails to throw at police. They are the most feared group in the anti-globalization movement, the Black Bloc. Their political ancestry began in the early 80s when German squatters occupied thousands of abandoned buildings in Frankfurt, Hamburg, and Berlin. The success of local autonomists in repelling police earned them the name of Das Schwarze Block. an anti-fascist and heterogeneous movement born in an autonomous environment. Black Bloc later widened to include neo-Nazis from the former East Germany, including the shaven heads of Blut und Ehre, Blood and Honor, Die Dreien S, and Gruppe 88, or Group 88. The Nazi skins opposed globalization in order to defend the Aryan race, as upheld by their ideological mentor, the former Red Army faction terrorist turned NPD leader, Horst Mahler. So again, note underground Reich infiltration, or at least co-option of elements of the anti-globalization movement. And again, the anti-fascist nature of the Black Bloc and its subsequent at least partial co-option by fascist elements is relevant to those of us here in the United States as anti-war sentiment vis-a-vis Iraq builds. Note the following. This from the San Francisco Chronicle of Monday, January 27th of 2003. Article by Tom Abate, or Abate, A-B-A-T-E. Black Bloc protesters make their mark in San Francisco. The band that broke away from the January 18th peace march along San Francisco's Market Street and spent 35 minutes vandalizing the financial district marked the Bay Area's introduction to Black Bloc protests, police say. The Black Bloc, named for its activists' black attire, couples a confrontational style of street protest with anarchist philosophies. It arose in Europe during the late 1980s and again was initially anti-fascist, now apparently is being in some ways co-opted by fascist or third-position fascist elements. By the way, note that that organization, talking about underground Reich presence on both sides of an ideological divide, was organized by International Answer, which is headed up by Ramsey Clark, the former attorney general who helped the Deep Six Jim Garrison's investigation, covered up the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, and who represents, among others, Sheikh Rahman, the mastermind of the first World Trade Center bombing, and also Lyndon LaRouche, among others. Now, note the Black Bloc's presence in Genoa in July of 2001 in For the Record 320, among other programs. We took a look, or at 320, among other programs, we took a look at the Alleanza Nazionale, again, the successors to Mussolini's Fascisti, with whom, among others, the Likud party has connections, and their presence in Genoa. On the other side, the Berlusconi coalition government, the deputy prime minister, Gianfranco Fini, head of the Alleanza Nazionale, was heading security there. We're going to conclude with this article from the New York Times of Wednesday, September 26th of 2001, article by David Sanger, Two Leaders Tell of Plot to Kill Bush in Genoa. The president of Egypt and the deputy prime minister of Italy have said in recent days that they were aware of a threat from Osama bin Laden's network of Islamic terrorists to kill President Bush and other leaders of the industrialized world when they met at a summit meeting in Genoa last July, skipping down. Several days before Mr. Mubarak's interview, in an appearance on Italian television, Gianfranco Fini, the Italian deputy prime minister, discussed parallels between the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and warnings his government had received before the Genoa meeting in July. And note the presence on the pro-globalization side of Gianfranco Fini and his fascists, on the anti-globalization side of elements associated with the NPD through the previously anti-fascist Black Bloc. Note, again, the presence of the underground Reich on both sides of ethnic and ideological divides and their Machiavellian politics. I've alluded to other programs. Those are available from tape duplication service Spitfire. Spitfirelist.com is their website. They supply radio stations with tapes or CDs for broadcast for free. Sister station WFMU-FM is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. Recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record 397, The Virtual State and Machiavellian Politics. This is being recorded on February 2nd of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.